Lamar.
Oh, the back of right hand. Felicia right in the mug. A Miles Plumlee.
Throw it.
Oh, my.
Down,
gosh.
Big man. Throw it down.
This is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
Welcome in, everyone. Another edition of Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our inside look at the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Our first guest, the Hall of Fame writer from Bulls.com, Sam Smith. Sam, thanks so much for joining us. And the big news this week, Bulls rookies Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen, or at least one is a rookie, named to the Rising Stars game for NBA All-Star Weekend. That's a pretty good lift for this Bulls team, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely that. You know, it's the old rookie sophomore game, and they who knows what format they got. They were playing local internationals against Americans one year and all sorts of stuff. But, you know, what it really speaks to a couple of things, Steve. One is, you know, how good a pick Markkanen was. You know, there's so much uncertainty before the draft. I think, you know, if you looked at that draft now and just did it, you know, without Simmons, who was drafted a year ago, I mean, Markkanen would be the first or second pick in the draft, you know, as well as he played and as how well he projects. And not that seven is a low pick, you know, he still was picked high, you know, so you've got that element. And the fact that, you know, Chris also moves in, a guy who was viewed as, you know, we make, you know, judgments much too fast in this era, of course, you know, factors of social media and everything, but Chris was viewed as a bust last year, you know, and we certainly wasn't, you know, people in the NBA didn't think so, but, you know, there was a lot of media and fan reaction to that effect in the circumstance. But, you know, it explains a lot of ways. They say, well, you know, how come the Bulls are not tanking and losing and getting a draft pick? Well, you know, they got the draft pick. You know, the trade turned out to be, you know, a better than they had hoped. Well, maybe they hoped for more. You know, you always hope for everything. But the trade effectively gave them, you know, 3 years of lottery picks, you know, with Zach LaVine coming back also, you know, after the surgery. So the fact that those two guys, you know, are recognized by the NBA as two of the elite young players in the NBA, which is not what that game means. You know, that game is basically saying, you know, these are, they named it, the Rising Stars of the game. You know, but these are the top young players of the game. And the fact that the Bulls have two representatives, you know, already, two who we probably didn't anticipate, you know, maybe Lowry because of the, you know, top 10 pick, but, you know, there are other top 10 picks from this draft who are not in that game. You know, so it's a, you know, both it's great for those two guys, it's great for the organization, but it's also a recognition of why the team is currently ahead of schedule.
Busy with Sam Smith, Bulls.com. This is Chicago Bulls Live. I'm Steve Cashel. Staying on that NBA All-Star Game theme, Sam, I guess it's going to be, what, your 30th or 31st consecutive NBA All-Star Game?
Trying to count those out the other day, and which demonstrates how, you know, some days are pretty boring. Yeah, you don't get anything for that, as it turned out. I think I've been to like 31 straight of these things, and actually in recent years, the way they've been played, you know, a lot of media have been trying to get out of them, I think. But yeah, unfortunately, I think it'll get better this year. I hope so. It was a great game in the 80s. Not only with the players, you know, but Magic and Isaiah, the way they played it, obviously Michael and, you know, some of the other guys, but those guys were able to make it a show and a competition. You know, this era of players haven't quite figured that out. So maybe with the choosing up sides things will be a little different. Last year's game was an abomination, worst one ever.
Yeah, so that's the story, Sam, with this NBA All-Star Game this year, the new format, two captains, LeBron James and Steph Curry, one from the East, one from the West, conducting a draft that took place, each player choosing 11 players for a 12-man team. Is it going to be more competitive? Do you think these guys will go at each other a little bit more than they have in the recent past?
Well, I think it'll be more, not so much because of the schoolyard picking sides things as much, although, you know, you get a sense of the lack of competition, that they didn't want it publicized or televised, whatever, you know, sort of, you know, you wouldn't see who was picked last. So there's an element of a lack of competition there. I think it'll be more that the, you know, they were embarrassed by what happened last year. I think the commissioner and somebody probably said something to them to the effect of, you know, you guys, this is awful. You don't want to be associated, you know, with that kind of. And I understand not wanting to get injured, but, you know, you can still play a semblance of basketball. And so I think on that level, I think they will, just because it had sunk, you know, to such depth last season. And I think they want to make a better showing of it.
Busy with Sam Smith from Bulls.com. This is Chicago Bulls Live. Sam, one of your articles this week really took notice on Bulls.com. You wrote about Chip Schaefer, who was with the Chicago Bulls during the Jordan era and the Phil Jackson era, then followed Phil to Los Angeles. He's now back with the Bulls as director of sports performance. And you pointed out Bulls healthier than they have been over the past 5-6 years, and maybe because of more proactive measures. I guess, you know, you can't blame it on the team doctors anymore. They always treat injuries, but with the data collecting cameras in the NBA arenas, Chip is a necessary piece right now with this Bulls team, and maybe what other NBA teams should go to, right?
Yeah, you know, it sounds like, you know, and I think people look at it and it sort of sounds like a fancy title, and they say, oh, you know, another bureaucracy or something. And I, you know, a lot of us, me included, don't pay a lot of attention to the medical elements of it. You know, these days you say, well, you know, an upper body injury. They don't even tell you where a guy is hurt, you know, so it sort of, you know, turns you out a little bit. But it was, you know, it was interesting that and we make fun of all the assistants they've had, you know, 11 assistants, 7, whatever the case is, they need so much. And these medical staffs have expanded. And so we sort of wondered about that. And I didn't even realize the depth of a lot of things, but I knew what the Bulls are doing and a lot of the additional things. But, you know, how much, and Chip made a good point in that. Chip, of course, was a Bulls trainer back in the championship years. Then when it fell to L.A. You know, and so has longer experience with him. But in coming back in that role, being able to things to unite the different, you know, the strength coach, the trainers, all the different elements, you know, of medicine, but also, you know, like he said, you know, he said, well, a guy sprains an ankle, we treat it. Well, it's more than that. You know, it's interesting with all the cameras, you always think of the analytics, but they're also checking the movements of the players. I got a kick out of, he was talking about when players on the road and they want to go out to a restaurant and they have a nutritionist who'll get the menu and say, well, you should have this, but not that. And so, you know, the minute detail that, you know, you don't know something when something's avoided, you know, like, well, the car didn't go off the cliff, so, you know, nobody makes a big deal about it because it's not supposed to. And, you know, I think that's the element of it, you know, try to, now, injuries for the most, you know, in a lot of cases are just bad luck. You know, a lot of things are going to happen no matter how much preventative work you do. But I think, you know, Chip's point was also preventative work is in modern medicine nationally. And it's also they're trying to do with teams. And so, you know, maybe you could cut down on a sprained ankle or a knee thing or everything. And I think the depth of so many things the Bulls are doing combines with how much when these players come back, how much they're ready to play. We saw Mirotić step right in, get 20 points, and LaVine has looked great, you know, in his early games, walking right in, getting, you know, 15 points in 18 minutes, whatever the numbers were. So, you know, I think the sophistication of the medical staff is something that, you know, a lot of us, including me, don't realize. And so just wanted to give fans a chance to see, you know, how much they do there.
Sam Smith joining us. Sam, final question. NBA trade deadline, February 8th. Nico Mirotić most likely on the block. And are the Bulls looking for a first-round pick, possible three-team trade? What are you hearing?
I really think it's going to be hard to get a first-round pick. Teams value these things so much now. I think out of proportion in a lot of respects, but some of it is financial. You know, teams want to have control of players for the 5 years that, you know, potentially you could with a draft pick at a much less salary, sort of a baseball model there. And so, you know, there's a potential issue with Mirotić in a sense, not just his production, but, you know, I'm sure he'd like to be a starter. Markkanen clearly has got that role. You don't want to risk losing him for nothing. So I think they're sort of hung up on that and debating it. And there's been obviously a lot of rumors of trade. I tend to think if it occurs, it would be closer to the draft time. You know, where there's more teams interested. You know, because a lot of, now once teams start falling out, like you look at the East now, and there's pretty much 9 teams. You know, a couple of teams going for that last spot, and you know, a lot of the other teams are sort of backing off and, you know, not necessarily trying to win games. It was unfortunate, but you see, you know, teams like Sacramento giving up, you know, ready to give up a lot of veterans. And that's the other thing too. There's a lot of veterans coming on the market for cheap. So I think, you know, a team like Cleveland looking at George Hill, you know, where you can get him cheaper rather than giving up a first-round pick. So in the end, I think it's going to be tough for the Bulls to do anything significant and get enough, really, to warrant it. But, you know, there always are the factors that we don't know about, as far as the contracts and guys starting and, you know, wanting to get at least something instead of nothing. So I don't expect as much has been rumored, but obviously as it gets closer to February 8th, and it's an earlier deadline this time, you know, before the All-Star break, which is a good idea, you know, we'll see more. But, you know, but right now I think it's kind of slowed down a little bit.
Wonderful stuff, Sam. Thanks for joining us here on Chicago Bulls Live.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate it. Sam Smith, Hall of Fame writer from Bulls.com. When we return, we'll visit with Will Perdue, the former Bulls center, now an analyst with NBC Sports Chicago. Stay with us on Chicago Bulls Live.
Here's Steve, Dog, and Brendan. Weekdays 2 until 6 p.m. on WLS AM 890.
And we're back on this Saturday night, Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Our weekly look inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cash. Our next guest, Will Perdue, the outstanding Bulls analyst with NBC Sports Chicago. And Will, boy, here we go. About to finish up this month of January, and thanks for joining us. Your thoughts about where this Bulls team is right now?
Surprisingly, they're a team that... Yeah. In my opinion, is it within striking distance of, you know, making the playoffs or putting themselves in a position to be in the hunt to make the playoffs? Because as we continue to watch Zach LaVine's minutes increase, his production increase, the hope of, you know, continuing the improvement of Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and when he comes back, the ability of the bench to continue to play well, You assume, and that's a dangerous word, but you assume this team will continue to improve. And when you look at their schedule on a whole, I think it's very favorable.
Well, you know, it's one of those situations, I know fans have talked about it, where not good enough to win an NBA championship, but not bad enough to get one of those top lottery picks. But, you know, when you're accelerating the rebuild, that's not a bad thing overall, is it?
No, it's really not, because, you know, I was very fortunate. I did a sit-down with John Paxson on Wednesday that, you know, we'll be playing periodically on NBC Sports Chicago. And one of the things that he mentioned was is that everybody wants certainty. They want certainty in the draft. They want certainty if you're going to make a trade. He goes, there's no certainty in professional sports. How can these people want certainty? They want assurances. That's not how it works. But the one thing he talked about and he's harped on when they, you know, started this rebuild was developing that winning culture. And I think they've actually done that. And as you mentioned, that process has been accelerated because of just how good these young guys are. Dunn in the trade, Markkanen in the draft, LaVine coming back from the injury. So I think they are ahead of where they should be or where they thought they would be. So now you're in a position of you're winning games, you're developing that culture. Because I'm always curious of how the average person wants to answer. Okay, so there's a lot of people out there that want them to tank, lose games. What kind of culture are you developing for these younger core of players if they see an organization doing that? I don't think you can afford to do that if you want to truly develop your younger players but yet want them to stay here because of the organization and because of this city and because of the fans.
Visiting with Will Perdue, former Bulls center. I'm Steve Cashel at Chicago Bulls Live. So another big story this month of January, Will, the return of Zach LaVine. And now six, seven games in, let's get your thoughts on Zach and what he's brought to this team. And is he better than you thought after sitting out since last February with the torn ACL?
Oh, no. I've watched some of his workouts since the season started. Talked to some of the guys on the team. I mean, Kendall and Gill and I talk about this all the time when we're sitting in the green room watching games. And we both truly believe he could be a top 10 player in this league. Just, he's one of those guys. There's always going to be some people out there because of how easy the game comes across to him. On TV to him. Because of his athleticism, his ability to jump over players, his ability, the speed from one end of the floor, they're going to say, he's not trying. But I think that's about as far away from the truth as you could possibly get. He's the guy because of the injury. He's the guy because of his ability. He's the guy because of his desire to want to be the face of this franchise. He's going to have to learn how to kind of dial that back a little bit because I think he's going to struggle with trying to do too much at times because of how he truly wants to perform and tell people and show people, along with himself, that, hey, I'm back. I can play. My knee is fine. So I think it's more of a mental approach for him, but I've liked what I've seen so far. You've seen some inconsistencies from one game to the next, but as he continues to develop that confidence and his knee continues to respond, he'll only get better.
Will, what type of player is he? If you're going to describe him for, you know, a fan that hasn't seen Zach LaVine play much, you know, he's a two guard. He can play some one, athletic guy. How do you best describe his game?
I think he's an athletic guy that can play three different positions. What you're seeing now is obviously that Chris Dunn deserves to be the starting point guard on this specific team. We don't know about next year, who's going to be here, what the situation is, who they draft. So he's your primary ball handler. But I think Zach LaVine can then slide over and be your secondary ball handler and maybe, you know, be more effective. And I don't necessarily mean a more effective ball handler than a Jerian Grant, but a guy that can be more dangerous because of his ability to score as a primary and secondary ball handler more so than Jerian Grant, because Jerian Grant's assist-to-turnover ratio is very good, but he obviously is a facilitator first, a scorer second, and sometimes teams play him that way, and he struggles at times. And I think an obvious perfect example is against the New Orleans Pelicans, the last 5 minutes in regulation and overtime. He struggled because they amped up the pressure because he doesn't necessarily have that ability to go one-on-one and break guys down. He can't have that impact that Dunn has, who's out of the game. So I think that's where LaVine comes in. I would have loved to see him be in that position in that Pelicans game, but unfortunately with the minutes restriction, he couldn't do it. He was already done for the night. But I think also because of his athletic ability, he could slide over to the three and guard bigger players, but yet force them to guard him in the full court. So I think he's a guy that's multi-positional that, again, could be, if 100% healthy, both mentally and physically, could be a top 10 player in this league. Very exciting, and obviously we know very explosive. And here's another thing for you. I'll throw this little tidbit out there. I'm not sure he'll be in the dunk contest again until it comes back to Chicago. Keep that in mind.
That'll be fun. That would be really fun. Our guest is Will Perdue, former Bulls center, current Bulls analyst, NBC Sports Chicago. By the way, the NBA All-Star Game slated for United Center in 2020. Will, I'm going to have you play the role of general manager now for the Bulls. Would you make a trade? Do you deal one of these guys? Nico seems to be the hot topic right now. Maybe a Robin Lopez, maybe Justin Holiday. The NBA trade deadline is February 8th. What would you do?
If you have a situation where you truly believe, and in this case this would be me, if you truly believe there's a situation where this makes the team better in the future, not necessarily tomorrow or the day after the trade, but it's a situation where because of what you get in return, whether it's talent in return, whether it's draft picks in return, whether it's flexibility in return, if you truly believe that helps this team going forward, then I think you have to do something. But I don't think you should just make a trade to make a trade. You know, it's you have to get value in return. And the other thing is you got to be careful. I know a lot of people are like, hey, you need to trade Nico. I think Nico is the most valuable asset that they have at the moment that they're willing to trade. Let's put it that way. But at some of these teams, in order to take a draft pick in return that you consider to be acceptable, where you can pick somebody that's going to have an immediate impact, not somebody that if you draft later in the first round that may have an impact 3 or 4 years down the road. This is somebody because of youth, you need to have an immediate impact, meaning can contribute next year and then be a really good player that second year. But you're going to probably have to take a bad contract. And then if you do that, how does that hamstring you going forward as far as in a free agent situation? And then are you willing to absorb that bad contract and immediately get rid of that player? You know, there's all these things to take into consideration, and I know a lot of people just want to make a trade just to make a trade. But it's got to be one that, in my opinion, seems somewhat lopsided in the Bulls' favor.
Visiting with Will Perdue. Will, final question. Appreciate you joining us. Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, voted by the NBA assistant coaches this week to join NBA All-Star Weekend and the Rising Stars game. Dunn will play for the U.S. team, Lauri Markkanen with the world team. What does that say about these two individuals?
I say the future is very bright for this Bulls organization. Now, this is a little selfish, but I personally feel that Markkanen can continue to develop his game. He's going to have plenty of opportunities to play in All-Star games. I hope, because of the situation that the Bulls are in, and some people are going to probably be like, what? Hey, enjoy your time while you're in L.A., but play in that game and then get the hell out of Dodge. Because we talked about at the beginning of this interview, the Bulls are kind of in a position where, you know, they're on the fringe of, you know, putting themselves in the position to possibly get that 7th or 8th seed, which in the past I would have said forget. But because of a young team, I think the experience is invaluable. But you and I, over the years, Steve, we've seen guys that have gone to the All-Star break, done way too much, had way too much fun, and it's taken them a couple weeks to recover when they've gotten back to their teams and started back into the regular season again. So I do hope he enjoys himself. I hope he plays well, but I hope that he also leaves L.A. early to get that rest that's needed for that second-half push.
Great point. Great stuff, Will. Really appreciate you joining us.
All right, Steve, thank you.
That's former Bulls center Will Perdue. Up next here on Chicago Bulls Live, we'll hear from Notre Dame head basketball coach Mike Bray. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.
WLS AM 890, where you hear news, traffic, weather at the top and bottom of every hour, every day. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Our look inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball, the NBA, and beyond. And beyond means also the college game. And right down the road in South Bend, Mike Bray doing a marvelous job with his Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And Chuck Swirsky had a chance to visit with the Notre Dame men's basketball coach.
Mike, we can go a lot of different places. I know our time is limited, but first, I want to ask you, I read a great story about your parents.
Sure.
And let's talk about your mom first. She was very influential in your life. She was an Olympian. Give me an idea about how she shaped and molded Mike Bray.
You know, she was the ultimate competitor. She really was. A 56 Olympian. She was swimming and competing in women's athletics, you know, back in the 40s and 50s. When there weren't a lot of opportunities for women, she was so ahead of her time. But the ultimate competitor, Olympian, she was a great educator and teacher, as was my father. So the dinner table talk around our house was them and how they interacted with their students. What always struck me about both of them, my mother and father, was their pupils or their players who played for them or swam for them would come up to me when they weren't around and said, man, I love your parents. I love your dad. He's been great with me. And I think that was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to have impact like that. And so in a lot of ways, I feel I'm still in the family business. We're all educators. My sister is an elementary educator down in Florida. My brother is in education. But my mom was the ultimate competitor, very intense, still competitive right up till the day she died. Would call me when she was 83 and She'd say, yeah, I'd wait for her to say, Mike, how you doing? And she'd go, are we ready for Duke tomorrow? So, you know, there was an edge about her that I probably got a piece of, and thank God I did.
Okay, so obviously no social commentaries, networking in 1956. Do you have any video of her in the Olympics?
I do, and I brought it home the other night. My son is with me right now for a couple weeks with my granddaughter and his wife, and I had some friends over, and she had an 8mm camera that she snuck into the opening ceremonies in Melbourne, Australia. She snuck it in, and we were watching it the other night. And, of course, the Athletes Village in 1956 was not the best of shape compared to what they build for him now.
It was like the NBA players on a yacht.
It was, exactly. She had footage of the track guys warming up. She has footage, get this, of Bill Russell and Casey Jones going into the dining hall. They were on the 56 gold medal basketball team. She has footage of her and Johnny Weissmuller.
Wow.
Tarzan. Yes. I was trying to explain to the young people who Tarzan was. Is. Johnny Weissmuller and her were on, you know, he was on the men's, she was on the women's team. So we're looking at it, and my daughter-in-law was going off on the opening ceremony events. They had white gloves, and it was just, it was unbelievable. We watched it during the Olympics because every Olympic year, you know, I always think of her so much because that was her time, and we would talk almost every night during the Olympics.
All right. I do want to get to X's and O's, and I really want to talk Notre Dame basketball, obviously, but I also want to address a subject that's obviously very sensitive, but a lot of people probably can relate to what you're going to discuss, and that's dementia. Your father, unfortunately, passed away from that illness, and a lot of people are dealing with that. As a son, and also as somebody who's gone through this, what can you share with us?
I tell you what, I that was the hardest to watch him, you know, the last 6 months. You know, I didn't realize how much my mother was covering for him the previous couple years, but she really did. And then once we lost her, it was evident that he just could not take care of himself, and he deteriorated really badly after my mother passed. It was about 6 months to the day that he passed, but it was a blessing. He was in such bad shape, and you know, I've shared and talked about with other people my age who have parents in their 80s now and are going through it. It is really a cruel, cruel disease, affliction, whatever you want to call it. And so, you know, you're involved with a lot of charities when you're a coach, and you have a platform, and we do Coaches Versus Cancer, and I do a thing for the Heart Association, and I do want to get into some stuff with Alzheimer's and dementia and see if we can maybe get a cure for that, because my brother and sister and I were each, we were each other's support system, and you need that because it's really painful to watch.
You're entering your 17th year?
17, yes.
It goes quickly.
It does.
Wow.
It does. I can't believe I've been out here in the beautiful Midwest for 17, but it's been a great fit.
Well, it has been a great fit, and obviously the Digger was Digger, and he had a tremendous run, a great run, and I love the way you've embraced him, and he's open to coming to practice, and it's fantastic, where a lot of coaches would be looking over their shoulder saying, okay, like, I, you know, come on. But when that job opened up, did you ask for help to get that job? Did you put out, like, the moment that job opened up, I'm going after that job? How do you get to be the head coach at Notre Dame?
It's a great story, the drama behind it, because I was involved with it when Matt Doherty got it. Okay. I interviewed and did not get the job in 99, and Matt Doherty was hired. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that would open again in my window to move. So when
he left to go to North Carolina, his alma mater.
Right. And but when he took it and I didn't get it, I'm thinking, okay, well, he's going to be at Notre Dame a while, so that job will never open. What would be the next one for me if I continue to be successful at Delaware? Well, Roy Williams, talk about, you know, the domino effect in college basketball. I always kid Roy. I said, Roy, thanks for turning down a North Carolina job, because that set Matt up to take it, and he went to Carolina. So a year later, with a whole new AD, I'm back in the mix and I get the job, and it's crazy. I think because I was involved the last time and probably, you know, was a runner-up or a strong candidate, you know, they quickly reached out to me. And I'll never forget Missy Conboy, our associate AD, who's still there, called me at my basketball office in Delaware and was kind of sheepish because they didn't hire me the last time. Like, maybe I would. Well, you know, I don't know if you'd be interested, and you know, because we didn't hire you last. I said, Missy, nothing's changed. I think I'm a great fit for. Where do I need to be? Tell me where I need to be. I think I'm a great fit. So, fortunately, Kevin White hired me. Monk Malloy was the president at the time, and it's just been a fabulous fit. I think it's always one that I've been trained for. You know, being at Duke and being assistant there, and dealing with admission standards and having to recruit a pool of kids that are, that are, that are going to compete academically. I was used to doing that, and we had to do that at Delaware as well. So I thought it was a fabulous fit. And you know, 17 years later, we're still doing it, and I'm honored to be the guy at Notre Dame. It's such a powerful place. It amazes me still after 17 years, the reach of our brand worldwide.
Yes. Digger, I can still, as I'm doing this podcast with you right now, Mike, he wrote that note when he was a young coach there at Parsegan about one day he wanted to be the head coach, basketball coach at Notre Dame. When you were a kid, what were your expectations when you got into coaching? Where did you want to be?
You know, it's funny, when they hired me, the media, you know, they wanted something juicy, like, did you watch Notre Dame football as a kid on Sundays? I said, absolutely not. No, I didn't. I watched Notre Dame basketball, though, and Digger's teams were fabulous, and Trapuka and Jackson and Paxson and all of them, I watched them all. So that was my connection. I really thought I was going to be a high school coach. My dad was a high school athletic director. I was around him all the time. I was Morgan Wooten's assistant at DeMatha High School. And the year before, I tried to get the job at Churchill High School in Potomac, Maryland. I'm a physical education major, and they didn't have a teaching position. So I couldn't get the job. I go back to DeMatha a year later. I'm assistant at Duke. So, but I always thought of myself as, I'm going to be a high school coach. Coach Wooten had a huge impact on me. My dad were high school educators. I said, that'd be a good life. I've seen my parents live that way. Coach Wooten was such a mentor, and I respected him. I said, I think I'll do that. And, you know, you end up going to Duke, and you get on a different track. I still kind of draw, though. I was a classroom teacher at DeMatha. I taught U.S. history, six periods a day to juniors. And, of course, back when you teach at a Catholic high school, you take the oath of poverty. I was working bingos on the weekend. You're doing all of it. But you ended up on the college route. But the high school experience that I had as a teacher and coach, I draw on every day, I'm 22 years into being a head coach now. So it was a great experience for me to learn.
That's Notre Dame head basketball coach Mike Bray. Up next on Chicago Bulls Live, we're going to hear from NBA broadcaster Kevin Harlan.
The tools you need to face the day, like news, so you know what's happening in your world. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live. I'm Steve Cashel. Our next guest, a popular NBA broadcaster. You see him on TNT. It's Kevin Harlan. Here's more from Chuck Swirsky.
So, Kevin, give me an indication during basketball and football what your week is like.
Well, like yours, it's 7 days a week. When basketball starts, I know for you, plus you get the training camp, every day is a day of looking at the stories around the league with particular attention, of course, to your Bulls, and trying to kind of get back in the routine that is so much a part of a play-by-play guy's life. If you don't have that routine, Chuck, as you know, you're going to find yourself all scattered, and that's no way to prepare for a broadcast, no way to go into a game. And so that a lot of it is just planning each and every day. So every day of the week, especially when our TNT NBA schedule starts on the 13th with the preseason game out west, and then we start opening night on the 25th out in Golden State with the Spurs. I think Marv's got the game before that with Cleveland getting their rings. You've just got to make sure that every day, if you've got three or four priorities, if you can bang those things out, you usually find yourself in pretty good shape. There are times when we catch up. But whether it's watching tape and grading your own work or watching tape of the upcoming teams you're going to do and staying on top with all the stories and all the great work the beat writers around the league, both the NBA and NFL do, all those things kind of swirl throughout each and every day of my week. So while it's hectic and busy, probably no more busy than a lot of your listeners, but that's in our world, those are the things, those are the priorities we set up and we try to attain.
Kevin, let's talk about preparation and grading for a moment. You said that you grade yourself. There are a lot of broadcasters who, after a game, 2 days after a game, they don't want anything to do with that game. They don't want to see themselves. They don't want to hear clips. They just, you know, file and forget. There are others who say, okay, you know what? As soon as I get done, I want to hear the game. I want to know everything I did right, wrong, what I can do to correct. Where do you stand in that mix?
Well, I'm thinking you and I are probably alike, and that I like to continually evolve and improve, and I just feel that I owe it to the people that employ me and the own infrastructure of my career that, you know, much like any job out there, whether you're on commission, Chuck, or whether you're a football coach grading the plays and the players of that previous week's game, you know, I think self-analysis and self-improvement is pretty much at the core of what we do. So much of our preparation oftentimes goes to the wayside. And the only thing that really remains at the end of every discussion is, what was the delivery like? What was the performance like of that broadcaster? Were you on top of the storylines for sure, but when that big bucket was made with a couple seconds left, were you able to deliver? When that touchdown pass was thrown to end the game, were you able to, you know, capture all the things that made that, you know, from a broadcaster standpoint, possible? So going back and listening and making my own grade sheet, which I do for football, virtually play by play, and then basketball, which is more of a feel for me because you couldn't grade every play. The coaches do. They'll grade the deflections and if the guy was in the right position on a pick and roll or you know, did the guy set the kind of screen that and where was it set? For a broadcaster, you're making sure that, you know, on television in particular, I know radio is a completely different animal, but on television, that you're capturing the flow, you're engaging in a conversation, you're pertinent to what's going on the floor. So it's more listening for basketball, that the feel is good, and I'll make several notes on my games. And in football, it's a little bit more detailed. Have I mentioned, you know, the tackler every play? Have I made sure that I give the gains or the loss on every play? Have I recapped frequently enough? And then I do radio and TV there too. So again, those are different ways and different roads to go down. The bottom line is, as a broadcaster, and you know this because of your terrific career and where you've been and the jobs you've had, you've got to constantly self-analyze. There is not a lot of feedback we get. Our bosses, our superiors are not either comfortable doing it or feel like it's overkill if they do. So it's incumbent on, I think, us individually to really sit there, grade, and be incredibly honest with what you've heard. And more times than not, I will tell you, I'm disappointed. And rarely do I put off the headset at night and say, I think I've nailed it. In times that I have, I've not, when I've gone back and looked. In times that I feel that maybe I have failed, I go back and listen or watch, and I feel that probably it wasn't as bad as I thought. So it's a range of emotions. I'm probably too anal about this stuff, but I guess that's the way I've kind of patterned my career.
That's TNT NBA broadcaster Kevin Harlan. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Chicago Bulls Live. Many thanks to our executive producer, Dave Zaslowski, as well as Jonathan Bregman and Bill Karambelis. I'm Steve Cashel for Chuck Swirsky. Talk with you next week for another edition of Chicago Bulls Live.